Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's January the 22nd, 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. And then Jake Benjamin of Louis Dreyfus Biofuels will join us closer to the bottom of the hour to take up the energy markets. In agricultural news, key agricultural leaders in Congress are asking that the lending power of the farm credit system not be increased. And Iowa Senator Tom Harkin says the Farm Bill legislation now in conference is moving forward. Dave Dickey will have details of these and other stories shortly. Also this half hour, we'll hear about the new University of Illinois five-step program for the control of glyphosate-resistant weeds. Hey, and don't forget that just after the bottom of the hour on Tuesdays, we always talk with meteorologist Don Day. He'll join us for a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. So stay with us, won't you, for this Tuesday edition of WILL AM 580's Closing Market Report.
Hi, this is AM 580 Agriculture Director Dave Dickey. Join us this evening for another one of our free AM 580 Agriculture Outlook panels. Tonight's meeting is at the Holiday Inn in Terre Haute, Indiana. The meeting gets underway at 7 o'clock Eastern Time. That's 6 o'clock Central Time. Panelists for the meeting include Mike Zuzolo and Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities, Steve Erdman of EFG, and AM 580 Chief Meteorologist Ed Kieser. That's at the Holiday Inn in Terre Haute, Indiana this evening with a 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time start time, 6 o'clock in the Central Time Zone. Bring your agricultural questions. The meeting is free, and we hope to see you there.
Taking a look now at what happened in Chicago on this Tuesday afternoon. Futures in the wheat pit finished the nearby March contract 28.5 cents lower. That's 28.5 down 28.5 at $9.34. July futures at 8.90¾, up 12.25 for the day. March contract in the corn pit $4.89. The settlement price down 9.25. The May futures at 5.01¼, down 9¼ for the afternoon. And July futures in the corn down 9.5 cents at $5.10. December futures down 11 at 5.04 for the day. March soybean futures 24.5 cents lower at $12.39½. The May contract at $12.57, down 26¼. And July futures at $12.70¾, down 26¾. And November soybeans for next year at $37.75 lower at $12.17½ for the day. March bean meal at $3.3690, down $2.40 for the day. March bean oil at $51.68, down $1.46. February live cattle at the CME Group, 2.5 cents higher at 91.02½, and the April futures at 94.32½, 7.5 higher. January feeder cattle 37.5 higher at $98.05, and the March contract at 102.35, a nickel higher as well. February lean hogs 55.27½, finished 30 higher for the day. From the outside markets, the nearby crude oil futures trading the February contract 93 cents lower. They're below $90 now at $89.64 for the day. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average at 11,974 is just about 124 points lower for the afternoon.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us on a Tuesday afternoon to take a look at the futures markets is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Wayne. Wayne, let's first start and talk a little bit about the moves that the Fed that made this morning, down 0.75 percentage point. Did that make a difference on the start of the Chicago Board of Trade today?
Up the bearish attitude that we had from the overnight on Monday night, I think it softened up the ideas of how the stock market was going to react as compared to how Europe reacted and Asia reacted yesterday when we were closed for Martin Luther King Day. And that, of course, I think added a little bit of enthusiasm back into maybe the world isn't quite as bad as it was seeming just looking at the way that the S&Ps had traded yesterday. You know, we were looking at how the S&Ps were trading last night as we resumed trade on the electronic trade, and how the S&Ps had traded through the day. Basically, if you equated that on out, was a 480 to 520 point drop in the Dow. And of course, as you just said, the Dow is is only down about 106 here right now. So that's quite a bit of difference, about a fourth. So that's a good thing, and add a little stability to the markets today.
I see the low price on the Dow at 11,634 for the day. Did that go down and press a lower limit on the Dow? It seems to me that was at like 11,700 or thereabouts. Is that right?
I think it did do that. I think before the announcement happened there, Tom, and after the 0.75% announcement, why that, of course, we got a little better reaction to things. And I think that the crude oil bounced after that point in time, after being down as low as 85.42. Mm-hmm. You know, we're trading at 89 even now. So we saw some strength added to the outside markets. Where the real excitement sort of happened as far as the grains went, those in Minneapolis, Todd. The Minneapolis wheat is, and it even pulled the Chicago wheat higher at one time today. And then I think they finally figured out that Chicago wheat isn't white Minneapolis spring wheat. We did see the Minneapolis wheat pull all of the wheat higher, and it was really tugging on the beans and the corn on the towards the higher side too.
You know, that would be and that would be to entice, I suppose, spring wheat acres into the ground. Is that right?
Yeah, it is. I think that they're looking to we see notes that Canada is maybe going to cut back because of their spring seedings, because of some of the contrary crops, or the other crops that might be worth a little more to them. And along the way. But and then, of course, a little bit of the surprise on the report last week that we thought there was a few more acres of wheat that had been planted.
What do you see in the corn and the bean markets over the next month?
I think that we are going to be watching the economy, the world economy, very, very closely, Todd. And they're tied, I'm going to say, very closely to that, because sort of today we, as the crude oil market, as the Dow Jones, as the gold market and all that sort of took its ups and downs and come back, well, we would find some stabilization there. We're at very high levels. We're very worried about the economy. I think it's unfortunate we're in the middle of a presidential campaign where nobody can say anything good about anybody. And it's sad that we are trying to make, I think, the world overreact to this subprime problem. And maybe we should be overreacting. But I guess if it wasn't a problem last week, the beginning of the week, I don't know that this has changed that much in the week's time.
Well, it certainly appears, at least for the day, and we have some time left to trade yet, that the Fed's move this morning has stabilized the marketplace to some extent.
Yeah, I think it definitely has. And, of course, there's talk that there could be another 0.25% at the meeting here coming up. Anyhow, the regular meeting that was scheduled, Todd. So, you know, this was a non-announced meeting that they snuck in there and just did this right away to try to stabilize things here with a little bit of a surprise move rather than an anticipated one down the road. So I think that it has worked out well as far as this. Is it a Band-Aid that won't help in the long run, or is this good enough to take care of things? And I think that's the question a lot of people are asking.
Well, we'll keep tabs on that one and the world market, global markets with the Dow Jones and the S&P over time. But let's talk a little bit more about what's been happening in the corn and the wheat and the soybean markets. It's been awful choppy over the last week. Does this look like a top to you, or does it feel as if it's a marking time before a decision to either march much higher or to turn around and go lower?
I think probably the latter there, Todd. I think that we are still somewhat in the battle for acres after the government readjusted a few things, after we saw Sparks numbers last week that readjusted some acreage around like that. I think we're still in a battle for world acreage and for, you know, whether it's for ethanol, whether it's for biodiesel with the soybeans, whether it's for feed grains or food grains. I think that there's still a great demand to try to buy corn and bean acres out here, and the spring wheat acres also. So I think that we're somewhat marking time for that and trying to hang on to the acres. But also we are at some very, very, very lofty levels, Todd. As I've been in the business, I never remember $13 before this year in beans, and I never remember, you know, I can only remember one other time where we were saying five in front of corn. I've said five in front of beans a whole lot more than I've said it in front of corn. So, you know, a little bit of volatility, a little bit of sell-off, and a little nervousness is very warranted.
Yeah, the volatility in the marketplace, and I'm sure that you talked about this quite a bit with farmers last week because you're in Indiana, but the volatility in the marketplace, and this week too, has caused some grain elevators to decide that they're not going to use HTAs in the future, and that they're only going to have a basis bid once we get out to 2009. Do you expect many more to follow through on that kind of decision place? And is that a move that you found reasonable?
Yes, it is reasonable, Todd, and I'm going to say why. And the smaller, your large elevators, the Cargills, the ADMs, and I guess the Andersons are backing off from the farther out processing because they're putting their money in ethanol plants and in fertilizer and stuff instead of wanting to just keep it all in hedge money.
Mm-hmm.
We have seen in the past, having owned elevators and whatever, where large market moves can really hurt a small elevator and put them in a financial bind. And I think that basically to stay in business and stay strong, they cannot just carry unlimited amount of hedges out there without a fixed basis that they can't move on. And those HTAs, because they can't really move those sales on ahead, not knowing how the basis might be down the road. If they can lock it in and buy it at a set basis at a set price, and they can turn around and then say, hey, this is a profitable trade for me to do and handle and pass on the cash sale to another end user, that makes so they don't have to carry those hedges. So we're very much in agreement that this is how it should be handled. What we're not in agreement with is the idea of the mercantile to expand the limits for these funds and to take the basis levels, cash basis, clear out of the picture and make the basis wider in some of these instances.
Yeah.
We'd like to see the board not do that.
And when you're talking about expanded limits, you're talking about the spec.
The spec amount they can trade.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anything else to add before we let you go?
That's about it for today, Todd.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. He joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens each and every Tuesday afternoon. In about 2 minutes, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. Actually, in about 2 minutes, we'll take a complete look at what's been happening in the world of agricultural news. Here's the weather forecast from our own Ed Keezer. He says tomorrow, skies in the north will be cloudy. Some periods of light snow in central sections. Increasing cloudiness with highs tomorrow ranging from 12 in far northwestern Illinois to 37 in the far south, a little closer to the current hour tonight, he says, in the north, mostly cloudy skies, and in central and southern sections, partly cloudy. Lows will range from 2 in the far northern parts of Illinois to 18 in the far south. The extended forecast calling for another cold front that should pass through Illinois and Indiana tomorrow evening, that accompanied by some light snow. A brief shot of Arctic air will follow for late tomorrow night into Thursday. Dave Dickey's here now with today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, key lawmakers are asking the leaders of the Senate and House Agriculture Committees not to increase lending power of the Farm Credit System. Senate Banking Committee Chairman Chris Dodd and House Financial Services Committee Chair Barney Frank says jurisdiction over credit falls within their committees and not the Congressional Agriculture Committees. The issue is whether FCS should be permitted to expand its lending authority beyond its statutory mission of providing credit to the agricultural sector. Dodd and Frank believe such expansion is inappropriate. Senate Agriculture Committee Chairman Tom Harkin says there was a lot of progress made over the year-end break on farm bill funding issues, but he declined to go into specifics. Harkin indicated he is still considering whether to suggest cutting out direct payments and moving that money into other farm bill programs. Meanwhile, House Agriculture Committee Chairman Colin Peterson says it's ridiculous that President Bush has proposed a $145 billion economic stimulus package without funding ideas, while the farm bill needs just $15 billion in new funding to have, in his words, the biggest economic stimulus package rural America could ever have. Peterson says House Senate Conference Committee members need to agree on a bill by mid-February.
Because if the administration is going to veto it, then when we come back in those 2 or 3 weeks in March before the Easter break, we'll have a chance to take another run at it. If we wait until after the February recess, put a bill out there, the president vetoes it, then basically we're at permanent law. So, when permanent law, the more I look at it, is not out of the question. I think permanent law really is not that bad a solution or an option.
Friday, Senate Budget Committee Chairman Kent Conrad warned if lawmakers don't finish the farm bill by April 15th, there will likely be even less money to fund the bill. On April 15th, the Congressional Budget Office recalculates the overall budget baseline. Officials at the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development say ethanol and biodiesel production will become an increasingly persistent competitor for agricultural resources. They expect global biofuel production to reach 33 billion gallons by 2016, an increase of 160% over current production. OECD analysts say a 160% increase would require about one-third of cereal land in the U.S. and Canada, and about half the cereal, oil seeds, and sugar beets land in the European Union. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, encouraging you to visit our updated website at willag.org. That's willag.org. We think, at least we hope, that it's easier to get around and certainly easier for you to listen to the ag programming that's broadcast here each and every day. We'll call it narrowcasting on the website. You can pick up MP3 files directly from the site or sign up to have them delivered to your computer as a podcast. It's all at willag.org. Now up next, the University of Illinois has introduced a new weed management program. I'll have a report on how the land grant expects farmers to deal with weeds resistant to Roundup. Many weeds are now resistant to glyphosate. It's a herbicide commonly referred to by one of its trade names, Roundup. For farmers in the Midwest, a couple of glyphosate-resistant weeds are likely to cause a problem during the 2008 growing season, says University of Illinois Extension weed scientist Aaron Hager.
Two in particular that come to mind are giant ragweed, predominantly so far Indiana, Ohio area, and then water hemp in Illinois and Missouri so far to date. And suspicions, I think, of a possible another location in, I believe, in Kansas.
Populations of glyphosate-resistant giant ragweed have developed in whole counties in the eastern Corn Belt. Farmers in parts of Ohio and Indiana have already been battling this problem. Illinois farmers have been luckier so far, but the tides are turning. There is one field in the state with a population of water hemp resistant to glyphosate.
It will spread very rapidly. Unfortunately, we really can't predict how quickly it will spread because there are certain biological factors as well as abiotic factors that will influence how quickly this spreads. The safest assumption is that with repeated use of the same active ingredient, eventually we do get to that point of resistance. And then how quickly from, say, an epicenter event will that radiate out from that point?
The question then is not really if a field will have a glyphosate-resistant weed, but how to manage that weed when it arrives.
We've reached a point where there will be some fields that we suspect we will find perhaps as early as 2008 where there may not be any viable post-emergence options for water hemp control after it's come up in the soybeans. So we'll have to look in those scenarios at going back to extensive soil residual type of products that can give us some extended control. And the possibility does exist that some of these fields may have to be planted in wider row soybean to facilitate row cultivation.
The Illinois recommendation for dealing with an area where a glyphosate-resistant weed might occur is a five-step program. Use a full rate of a soil residual herbicide. Spray glyphosate post-emergence for the first time when water hemp is 3 to 5 inches tall. Scout that field 7 days later. If the water hemp control is not adequate, consider applying a PPO inhibiting herbicide. Scout the field again 10 to 14 days after applying the PPO. If the water hemp is still alive, get a hoe out of the shed. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson's team of experts and strategic consulting approach utilize the latest technology. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stewart-peterson.com.
It's a Tuesday afternoon time now on WLL to take our look, our weekly look, at the energy markets. Jake Benjamin of the Louis-Dreyfus Commodities Biofuels area is with us today. Good afternoon to you, Jake.
Good afternoon, Todd.
You know, with prices moving pretty quickly on Wall Street, and I think we went down to $85 or thereabouts on crude oil today. We probably ought to talk a little bit about ethanol and how the two are related, and then maybe if you could discuss with the high price of corn in that $5 area what plant margins are like, please.
I'd definitely like to do that. Crude oil, it's nice to see a little bit of a break, just talking from my own personal pocketbook. We were down three and change when I walked in here this morning from the electronic trade, and it's ticking down a dollar right now at $89.55. Obviously, dramatically impacted by world financial issues. Saw the Dow down 400 points this morning in electronic futures. Relationship to crude had been dramatically disconnected. We saw cash ethanol prices at 60 cents under gasoline futures. In mid-November, we've seen that come in to as narrow as 4 cents under gasoline futures, just drawing the relationship between ethanol and gasoline rather than ethanol to crude. And we think that relationship has a chance to strengthen here. If we have a new renewable fuels mandate that's asking for more corn ethanol and cellulosic ethanol behind that, and ethanol has to become on par with gasoline.
Tell me about that over the long term, what it really means. And we have doubled the amount of ethanol produced from corn that will have to come from corn in the future. And then, of course, cellulosic ethanol by the new energy standards that have been set forth by Congress. You think that this will drive, and I'm trying to get at how I want to ask this, will it drive the oil companies to look at more consolidation with places like Louis-Dreyfus or ADM or Cargill or maybe Panda or some other place?
My personal opinion is I don't believe so. I think they're content to have ethanol vendors supply them with a component of their finished gasoline. I don't believe it's in their business model to have to be vertically integrated, including ethanol. I just think it's completely outside of their scope.
All right, let's go back to a question you'll be more comfortable with. Are plants operating now with $5 corn in the red, or are they still okay?
For the time being, especially in the front 30 or 60 days here, ethanol plant margins look very healthy. And the history of the ethanol industry is where on the front 30 or 60 days is where the majority of the pricing occurs. And I would go so far as to say that in the last 4 or 5 years, we've not had a front-month situation where margins were in the red. Now, there have been a couple instances here in the last couple weeks, and then back in early November maybe, where deferred margins weren't positive and you couldn't book a margin for the next year or 18 months. But as we get closer to the shipping period, margins have always been relatively healthy on the magnitude of maybe 90 cents gross. You're going to have 45 to 55 cents in processing costs, depending on who you are.
Jake, we appreciate you being with us.
Thanks a lot, Todd.
Jake Benjamin with Louis-Dreyfus Commodities, the biofuels area, joining us here on a Tuesday afternoon. In 2 minutes, we'll take a complete look at the agriculture weather forecast with Don Day of Day Weather. Your regional newscast comes up next.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible in part by a grant from Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, providing independent commodity and financial analysis to clients throughout the United States. Risk Management Commodities Incorporated has offices located in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. More information is available at 866-837-9027.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Illinois American Water says a $51 million water treatment plant is needed to make sure the Champaign-Urbana area has an adequate water supply, and that a 59% rate hike is needed to help pay for it. The plant is already going up just west of Champaign. The water utility is presenting its case in three public meetings over the next week, the first one tonight in Urbana. The cities of Champaign and Urbana are questioning the proposed hike before the Illinois Commerce Commission, and the Citizens Utility Board plans to file a petition to have the increase lowered or dropped. A decision is due by September. Champaign City Council tonight will look at options for masonry work to the city building. Those repairs are expected to cost about $1.8 million. Structural engineer John Fraunhofer says it's not unusual for a 70-year-old building to require extensive masonry work. He says the extensive repairs would include replacing all the lintels or the L-shaped pieces that carry the bricks around doorways and windows, as well as roof and stonework on the building's tower that'll keep water from entering during storms. If city leaders approve, the work is likely to take place during 2009 and will require some street and sidewalk closures. Convicted terror conspirator Jose Padilla has been sentenced to 17 years and 4 months in prison. Padilla had faced a life sentence, but the former Chicago gang member's lawyers asked for no more than 10 years, saying he'd been mistreated and tortured while in custody. A judge says there's no evidence linking Padilla to specific acts of terrorism. An Indiana state senator is in a Fort Wayne hospital with what his family says is a critical illness. Senate President Pro Tem David Long says 58-year-old Senator David Ford of Hartford City was hospitalized last week and underwent surgery Friday. Grocery chain Kroger is voluntarily recalling Deli Chef Tri-Bean Salad due to a potential bacterial contamination. The company said the salad sold at home at some deli counters in Illinois and Indiana may contain bacteria which could cause the potentially fatal foodborne illness botulism. And the Illinois Attorney General's Office says it may sue toy maker Tie Incorporated for refusing to pull a popular but lead-tainted doll from store shelves across the state. Representatives with the Chicago area company have said it's not violating the law because federal rules supersede the state provisions. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon to you, Don.
Good afternoon.
Tell me about the weather here in the Midwest.
Burr
is right.
Yeah, temperatures all across the lower 48 states, colder than normal. And while we might see a little moderation in our temperatures as we get on into the end of this week, overall, we're still expecting the jet stream to have a very easy time meandering south out of Canada occasionally. So as we look forward into this last section of January, temperatures across the lower 48, including the Corn Belt Midwest, will continue to be averaging at or below normal. So we're going to carry on this cold weather, looks like, into early February.
Yeah, you got to hate a meandering jet stream, I suppose. Tell me what it's doing to the rest of the country.
Well, the most of the country is feeling the effects of this colder weather. The coldest temperatures, though, have been in the northern plains states, the Great Lakes, the northern Rockies. That's where the core of the coldest weather will be. But what we're going to see is a more active pattern when it comes to stormy wet weather in two areas. First of all, the Ohio Valley, the Mississippi Valley, and some areas of the southeast United States have a real good chance of seeing some significant moisture out of this. This is going to help out the drought areas in the southeast United States. And then we're going to see moisture and unsettled weather moving back into the California and West Coast areas as well. They're going to be getting more stormy. For the wheat areas, this pattern not terribly favorable for a lot of moisture in winter wheat country, though. But at the same time, they should avoid the severe cold.
And then if we look to the south, speaking of moisture, it looks like some areas of Brazil may have some moisture coming their way over the next few days. Is this right?
That is certainly looking that way. Some very far southern areas of Brazil may not get into as much moisture, but most of Brazil, at least from the forecast charts we're looking at earlier today, are indicating some good chances for rain over Brazil, and we'll include Argentina as looking at a real good chance of moisture as well. Both countries have some good rain chances. There'll be a few pockets, of course, that don't get as much, but I think the outlook for South America growing areas to get some moisture looks pretty good. Temperatures with this moisture, a little bit below normal.
Other places around the planet that we ought to be checking in on?
Well, if we were to go stay in the southern hemisphere and go over towards Australia, they're looking at some fairly good rain chances in some of the central, northern, and eastern areas. The precipitation over there has picked up a little bit, and so good news for them. Now, over into China, over into the Asian part of the northern hemisphere, it's been a little bit stormy. They've had some harsh winter storms over in China with some stormy weather, and that's going to continue above normal moisture and colder than normal temperatures for most of China.
Anything else to add before I let you go for the day?
Stay warm.
All right. Thanks, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Don joins us every Tuesday afternoon here on AM 580, and that is the Closing Market Report. Be sure to tune in tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our first in-depth look at the day's markets. And remember, you can listen to today's futures analysis and weather reports right there on the World Wide Web. Just go to WILLAG.org. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.